Hello and welcome to In Conversation with the Lancet HIV's monthly podcast. I'm Philippa Harris, the deputy editor, and today I'm talking to Marta Vasilev from the Astar Medical Center in Lviv, Ukraine, and Kasper Rox from the Erasmus University Medical Center in Rotterdam, Netherlands. Marta and Kasper's viewpoint on a support framework for the HIV care cascade for people living with HIV among displaced populations in Ukraine is published in the June issue. The June issue also contains articles on long-term antiretroviral use in women in sub-Saharan Africa, hepatitis C reinfection risk in people with HIV, and the Nadia trial on second-line therapy, and we hope you enjoy reading it. But now to talk to Marta and Kasper. Hi, so thanks Kasper and Marta for talking to us today. So I was wondering if you could start by setting the scene and telling us a bit about what the situation with HIV was like in the Ukraine prior to the invasion by Russia and what the immediate impacts of the conflict have been for people living with HIV.
So Ukraine is one of the countries in Europe that is most affected by HIV. Even the Russian terrorist invasion happened, and Ukraine is still disproportionately affected. Only 69% of almost 260,000 Ukrainian people with HIV that are aware of their HIV status, and 57% receive antiretroviral treatment. So even before the war, we were facing major problems to maintain 90 and to reach 95 goals. And we are, of course, were struggling for that, but taking in account open warfare occurring now in our countries, when antiretroviral sites are destroyed and there are cities with complete destruction of healthcare facilities, that is now much more complicated than it was before the war.
What were your aims in creating this framework? And yeah, if you could sort of briefly sort of outline how the framework, works.
Of course, our aim of creation this network was to help. We as HIV clinicians united by European AIDS Clinical Society, but by young investigators, we could not stand apart from the situation that is happening now in my country, because I'm Ukrainian clinician, and we developed this framework to try to sustain HIV care in Ukraine, and also with the aim to face the urgent and immediate needs that occurred because of the war. And of course, we are also thinking how to rebuild our HIV care after war will end sooner or later.
And if I may add, Philippa, it's actually, I think that this viewpoint really emerged from a broad desire as a European community of investigators and clinicians like myself to do something about it. So if I talk to me personally, and I think more clinicians, maybe colleagues in other countries might relate, when Russia invaded the 24th of February, it was, I believe, a Thursday. I remember that during that weekend that immediately followed the invasion, I felt very restless. Of course, I knew Marta for a long time. We have a long-standing collaboration, and also are connected through EX. I felt the need to do something about it. And that was actually something that more people felt, and especially within our Young Investigator EX network. And actually the viewpoint, it started as a position paper from that group. We felt that we needed to get the word out, that we thought that this was unacceptable, what was happening there, and that we were very worried about the people with HIV, the HIV care, and the HIV healthcare providers. But of course, as scientists as well, this evolved into a far more structured and systematic analysis of the problem, resulting in actually an evidence-based framework what to do about this, which is something that's unprecedented for European and for many European healthcare providers. Yeah.
And I also need to admit, when the war occurred in 24th of February, Kasper took a lead to organize the framework. He was the main inspiration person to do this within all our team, because on that time I was escaping my country and thinking how to save my kids, basically. So I'm so grateful, need to express my gratitude to all my colleagues all over the Europe, and firstly to Kasper, who made this happen finally.
Yeah, and actually this is vice versa, because once Marta and the family was safe, she felt the liberty to, you know, to help her country. At least that's my impression. And when this viewpoint emerged or evolved, it was clear that additional expert input also from Ukrainian healthcare providers who had a similar feeling about it and felt related to the subject was necessary. And Marta reached out in her network and asked several of her renowned colleagues, many of whom are still in Ukraine, if they could become co-authors, and they provided vital input that really brought this viewpoint and the practical guidelines that we want to propose there to a higher level.
I think it's really remarkable, because, you know, I imagine, you know, for you, Marta, and for your colleagues who are still in Ukraine, I can't believe the pressures that you must be under, and, you know, the ability to sort of put that aside and work on something like this is really incredible in the situation.
Yes, we need to acknowledge that the majority of Ukrainian teams that was involved in this viewpoint are still in Ukraine. Yes, and they were reviewing the drafts between the shelling alarms.
It's just unbelievable. I wondered if we could just sort of talk a bit about the network. So as you said, the viewpoint was authored on behalf of the European AIDS Clinical Society Young Investigators, and mentions the role in helping, you know, Ukraine and potentially in the future, you know, other situations, conflict situations, you know, the role that these HIV networks can play. You know, I think for me, sitting, you know, my computer, sometimes you think of these groups as organizing conferences and, you know, supporting research activities. But you know, that obviously, you know, there is an alternative role in these sort of very difficult situations. I was wondering if you wanted to sort of expand on that, but also if there were specific examples of support EACs have given or other societies.
So, of course, the YINC, Young Investigators Group, aims to foster deeper and more frequent exchanges among the new generation of HIV experts, and bringing a fresh perspective and innovative approach on HIV across Europe. And this has happened also in such emergency situation when a war occurred in Ukraine. And the aim of this group is to bring young investigators together and form a new network. And we have established a network of HIV clinicians all around Europe that are in constant contact, and before COVID pandemic, we were meeting regularly on the YINC conferences, and I hope we will see each other next time in person in June 2020, discussing young HIV clinician perspective of HIV care across Europe.
To me, these professional networks, you know, like you say, it sometimes you can say, well, what, you know, it's about organizing conferences, etc. But it's also about fostering relationships, and relationships are tested when they are under pressure. I think that this viewpoint is a perfect example of getting something out when there's a critical need for something, for a new guidance with relation to HIV care. And without this network, these people, these authors, would not have found each other that easily. The first draft of this viewpoint was created within 4 days. Like I said, in the first weekend after the war, I contacted Agata, Oana, and Jose, who are HIV experts from Poland, Romania, and Spain, and also sitting in this network. And we drafted the first sentences actually almost overnight within a weekend and so distributed it within our group. So this is a good example. And this also, on a little bit larger scale, resulted in the Aware HIV Ukraine initiative, which stands for more for to create awareness. We managed to, on an individual level, for example, to provide medical support from European physicians to their colleagues, who they knew through these networks in Ukraine, and also to fundraise. And a network helps to bring this under the attention. And maybe on a more larger scale, which is, I think, more on the governance board scale, professional networks are I think, a fundamental partner in discussions on antiretroviral therapy availability and procurement, for example, and also have the necessary critical intellectual mass to be able to handle uncertain situations where flexibility is essential, but also scarcity is a reality in medical resources.
From Ukrainian perspective, we sharply lack such professional network, especially in HIV care, as we were even before the war in Ukraine, we had no professional HIV clinician network in our country. So our YINK network fulfilled this gap, bringing the science and bringing real help when the war happened. The members of the network were sending me medical supplies, drugs, and of course it resulted to a publication in Lancet, and we are very on behalf of myself as Ukrainian clinician, I am grateful to every member who was involved in this publication.
No, it's an amazing effort. So just going back a bit, sort of talking about the framework, I wondered what you thought were the main priorities for HIV-related humanitarian aid. So both within Ukraine, and then obviously there's also the situation where, you know, there's a large number of displaced people in the neighbouring countries.
Well, so we based this framework on the UNAIDS guidance and from 2010 on humanitarian help. And basically there it's divided on essentials that need to be done regardless of the situations and need and aspects that need to be done as soon as circumstances allow. But of course, as clinicians, we know there are many essentials, but if you're alone and you have to do like four or five essentials, you need to choose. So that reality is something we wanted to reflect in the framework, and we used our clinical experience to do so. So there are four phases, basically: the immediate, urgent, consolidation, and post-war phase. And it's more, I think, in the end, more directed to a setting within Ukraine, because the level of scarcity and the difficulty of the situation because of direct warfare is less in others, in for example neighboring countries, but the framework can still be used there if especially scarcity is problematic there, and it can certainly raise awareness on certain more cultural differences or needs, also on a psychological, more stigma level. But of course, if we're zooming in on the more urgent phase, in the immediate phase, I mean, it's the first phase. It really is about sustaining the second pillar of HIV care, which is treatment and ensuring undetectables and transmittables. So antiretroviral therapy supply and critical AIDS care to people who need it.
You mentioned stigma there, and I was just going to sort of ask about, you know, there's been big fears that you know, refugees might be really reluctant to disclose the fact they're living with HIV because of stigma, especially for sort of sexual gender minorities or injection drug users. I wondered if you know, you had any ideas about, you know, best practices to overcome this, or, you know, any specific examples that you know about that, you know, are making a difference.
Indeed, stigma is a big issue in Ukraine, and talking about internally displaced population, populations that migrated from the eastern part of Ukraine to the western parts of Ukraine, they might face, we need to admit that might face stigmatization in the healthcare institution. And as a successful example, with Casper and myself, we would perform to them a new format of medical care institution, a testing point, a checkpoint, completely stigma-free for key populations, for injective drug users, for men who have sex with men that are highly stigmatized in Ukraine still, unfortunately, for commercial sex workers that could come and might receive service, all related services to infection disease, not only HIV, because itself, HIV, the word HIV is bringing stigma to the people. So we would prefer avoid HIV, but perform infection disease testing for all this population in our checkpoint.
Yeah, and I was going to ask about, you know, ways possibly to improve coordination of services. I mean, as Casper highlighted, you know, in some situations, you know, you really don't have the luxury. It's you know, about doing as much as you can in a very, very challenging situation with, you know, very, very little resources. But, you know, perhaps when there is a little bit more room to maneuver, you know, are there ways that we can improve coordination? So like you said, you know, different kind of screening, you know, mental health support, which must be a huge challenge for the health services in Ukraine at the moment, things like that.
Indeed, mental health support is crucially important now. And I would talk about Lviv, my home city, that became now a refugee hub center for all migrants that are fleeing the country and also remaining and come to live to western part of Ukraine after fleeing the eastern parts of Ukraine. And we do have a network of psychologists, psychiatrists that are united by a European Union project that are providing mental health support for the refugees. But of course, for now, it's not enough. And we would like also to expand such services, though it's not our field of expertise. But we would, of course, be very interested in establishing, and this collaboration is already being established, to collaborate together and to provide for our patients counseling and psychotherapy if needed, and all the wide range of psychosocial support services.
So one thing, you know, in the viewpoint that you talk about is not just the current situation, but also, you know, looking to a future that hopefully will come very soon, but you know, who knows, where, you know, post-conflict, you know, how can the framework and the ideas in it, you know, support Ukraine, you know, going forwards?
I think that it can be used in several ways. Of course, during the war, it will highlight the needs. It will, especially if the war will let's hope not, but take longer than we hope for. Such viewpoint helps to direct people to the essentials, as well as, of course, other statements by main professional organizations, of course. But such a viewpoint and a publication helps, because it's also, you know, it's peer reviewed and puts it into the scientific domain. But also, as we clearly show in our viewpoint, our main phase is the post-war phase, and there we think three aspects that are critical and that we can already prepare for. One is the transfer of care from people who fled their hometowns and need to come back there. It's simply a structured handover. You need to know what happened with these people, with that care. How was their treatment? Were they always suppressed? Were they deprived of therapy? Were there any concomitant illnesses? So, you know, that's like basic clinical stuff, but it needs to be around right if we want to ensure proper care. And the other aspects are really to rebuild the targets. The 1999 to 95 goals are are something that Ukraine was on its way to, but of course is hit hard now to a level that we cannot predict at the moment, I think, but that needs to be revitalized and put on back on track. And the third aspect, and that's also where I think that that the professional network can also help, and where this framework also, you know, points out the relevance, is HIV research. It is, I think, an open question, you know, how to best ensure that the road towards achieving those cascade of care goals in such a situation where so many aspects of healthcare, and not only healthcare, but all other vital aspects of well-being and life are threatened, but also likely to remain deprived also if the war would end now. So this framework, although it you know, it sketches or drafts a maybe a more general, you know, horizon, it defines some essentials where the rebuilding phase needs to go and where preparations might start now.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, thank you so much for submitting it to the journal. And I mean, in a way, you know, we wish we didn't have to publish it. And, you know, we really hope that the post-conflict stage comes very quickly. But, you know, thank you. Thank you so much for sending it to us.
Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you for
publishing it.
Yeah.
So we'd like to thank Marta and Casper for talking to us today, and I hope you enjoyed listening to the podcast and that you found it useful. So please join us next month when we'll continue the conversation.